Good morning, and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. My name is Emily Winicky, and I'm the Community Engagement Coordinator here at Syracuse University. I would like to begin, as we do with all Syracuse University events, by acknowledging with respect the Onondaga Nation, firekeepers of the Haudenosaunee, the indigenous people on whose ancestral lands Syracuse University now stands. I am now honored to introduce this morning's speaker, Alberto Bianchetti. Alberto is the regional director for the National Grid's Central New York Division, a 13-county region that spans from Cortland to Clinton counties and includes the Mohawk Valley. In that role, he leads a team of energy utility professionals focusing on account management for National Grid's largest customers in the region, including manufacturers, healthcare facilities, educational institutions, real estate developments, municipalities, and Native American enterprises. His team is also accountable for engaging with local and state authorities during storms and emergencies, government relations, civic outreach, and community giving. Before appointment to his current role, Alberto led National Grid's New York State Government and Legislative Relationship Portfolio in upstate New York. Since joining National Grid in 1991, his other roles have covered responsibilities in regulatory and corporate affairs, including with teams involved in the company's regulatory rate filings, divestitures, and acquisitions. He holds a dual bachelor's degree in journalism and economics from Newhouse and Maxwell, a master's degree in media management from Newhouse, and an MBA from Lemoyne. He and his wife, Rosemary, a speech pathologist, have two adult daughters. Please join me in welcoming Alberto Bianchetti.
Thank you very much, Emily, and good morning, everyone, and thank you for being here. So let me take a minute to introduce some of my National Grid colleagues while I'm up here. Up here in the front row is Virginia Limiatis, who handles our communications for Central New York. Back there in the corner is Gwen Sanders, who manages our community outreach. And right next to Gwen is Chris Gorman, who manages Onondaga County for National Grid here in Central New York. I want to say thank you again to Emily and to Bea and to the whole university for the opportunity to speak. Emily mentioned a little bit about myself. I am a Syracuse native. I've lived in Onondaga County all but 11 months of my life. And I have a long history both in Central New York and with National Grid and its predecessors. There are three questions that I get asked by audiences, especially policy-sensitive audiences, about energy in Central New York and energy issues in general. I'm going to answer two of those questions on slide four, and then I'm going to save the last question for the very end in Q&A and see if I get it. If I don't get it, I'll bump that question down the list, but I'll still answer it. And so let me start by just briefly introducing you to National Grid. I know you know who Niagara Mohawk is as a legacy company, and you know who National Grid is in general, but let me just show you in graphic detail. National Grid serves more than 20 million electric and natural gas customers in New York, Massachusetts, and Rhode Island. The ruby-colored area is our electric market area in the Northeast. As you can see, we serve most of Central New York, the North Country, mostly all of the of upstate New York north of the Thruway, except for a pocket around Rochester, and then a large portion of Western New York. We serve much of Massachusetts for electricity as well, and all of Rhode Island. The hashed areas in green along the 81 and Thruway corridor are where we are the electric and gas company. So like in Onondaga particularly, we deliver electricity and natural gas in those areas and also in the hashed areas in New England, the Cape, and in and around Boston, and all of Rhode Island. And then in downstate New York, we are the natural gas delivery company. We are the successor company, if you're from downstate, we are the successor company to Brooklyn Union Gas. So we deliver natural gas in Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island, and we deliver natural gas in all of Long Island. So that's a footprint of who National Grid is. And also, as you know, we are a UK-based company. In the UK, we own and operate the electric transmission company in all of England and all of Wales, and we operate it in Scotland. The biggest difference between our business in the US and the UK is in the UK, we are a wholesale business. We do not deliver electricity and natural gas to the final customer. We move it from generators to substations, and then other companies handle the last mile. We also have several interconnections between the UK and mainland Europe to move electricity back and forth, primarily moving renewable sources from mainland Europe onto the British Isles. The title of this presentation is Energy, the Past, Present, and Future. I'm only going to dwell on the past for briefly, but does anybody recognize this photo?
No, but I recognize some of the stoves.
Yeah, exactly. Well said. So many of you, or probably all of you, have been in our building. This is our auditorium in the 50s, okay? And this will become even more relevant to you in the future, but during the last significant energy transition, our role was to educate, and please pardon the anachronism, educate housewives on how to use energy in their home, how to use natural gas, and how to use electricity for cooking, for cleaning, for other efforts of daily life, moving away from the wood stove, moving away from other sorts of fuel. So National Grid used to have classes where we would bring in mostly women to teach them how to use energy in their home. And if you went to one of these classes, you got a National Grid cookbook. And so if anybody needs a recipe for ham loaf or I think asparagus parmesan is in there, then please come see me. But the reason I mention that is because National Grid and utilities have had a history in helping customers understand what it means to be an energy consumer and how to use energy to your benefit. And that history is going to be amplified again in the coming months and years. So the New York System Independent Operator is the organization, a not-for-profit organization that manages the balancing of the electric system in New York State. And so I'm going to answer our the first two questions that I always get quickly. Okay, so this is the real-time dashboard for the ISO. If you scroll down halfway, Emily, the first question I usually get is, where does our electricity come from geographically? Where does it come from? So you can see the state of New York there, and those are the various regions or zones that the electric system is managed in. And you can see that if you look at the bottom, that is what's happening between New York and Pennsylvania. So we are currently importing electricity. The red arrow is coming into the state. We're currently importing electricity from some parts of Pennsylvania and exporting it to others. That's actually the PJM, is the Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Maryland system. Along our eastern border with New England, there's a management system there. In some areas, we're exporting it to them. In some areas, we're importing them. Along our northern border, Hydro-Quebec, we're always importing from Hydro-Quebec. Hydro-Quebec has a tremendous amount of electricity. And to the west, you see the Ontario system. And so there's always a back and forth, but on average, New York is a net importer of electricity from other states. The thing that I'll point out to you on the left is electricity in New York State is zonally priced. So it is priced according to the various zones in the state. And what drives the price is very straightforward: supply and demand, and the ability to move supply to the market. The one theme that I want to let you know here, is electricity is more expensive as you move from west to east. For obvious reasons, the St. Lawrence, the Niagara, larger power plants are sited in upstate New York, in western New York, and central New York. So if you look in the Buffalo area, electricity right now is at $19.94 a megawatt. If you go down to Long Island, it's $24. So almost a 20 to 25% premium between the cost of electricity in upstate New York and the cost of electricity in downstate New York. Where does my electricity come from a fuel perspective? So the first question is, where does it come from geographically? The second question is, where does it come from a fuel perspective? So the amber is nuclear, about 31%. And this is real time, by the way. This is 8.05 a.m. this morning. So this is a real time presentation. The amber is nuclear. The red is a combination of what's called natural gas and dual fuel. Dual fuel are power plants that have the capacity to burn both natural gas or oil. In this market condition, all of them are burning natural gas. So if you were to add 22 and 22, essentially, about 44% of the electricity being generated to serve customers in New York right now is being generated through the burning of natural gas, about 31% nuclear, 23% hydroelectric. And if you were to click on the wind is about 1%, and other renewables is about 1.6%. What you don't see on this donut is other fossil fuels. We are not burning coal in New York State to generate electricity. On occasion, you might see a little, maybe less than 1%. Or you may see an oil facility that doesn't have the capacity to burn dual fuel. So where do I get my electricity? Most of it is generated in New York State, but a significant portion comes from outside of state. What are the fuel sources? Nuclear is about a third. Natural gas is about 40%. Hydro is about a quarter. And then a very, very small portion of other renewables, wind and solar. So here is the load, what a load forecast, what a load looks like in New York State on the left. So predictably and intuitively, the load starts to increase right about 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning as you start your day. The hash line is the forecast, the solid line is the actual, and if you click on Zone C, Central New York, all the way, okay, that's the Central New York portion of the load. And just click on Long Island. So our load is very comparable to Long Island, the amount of electricity that we use here in Central New York, and that's as it is. This is on the New York ISO website for the wonks out there that want to learn more about it. It's just a fascinating website to drive through. At least it's fascinating for me. I don't know. Could be. All right, so we're off of this one. Emission sources in New York State. What causes the emission of carbon into our environment from the energy portfolio of New York State? The vast majority comes from transportation, moving trucks and cars and planes and buses and trains around. The lighter blue is electrical power, about 27 tons or 27%. And then you can see the other portions are commercial, industrial, and transportation. The point that I want to make here is transportation is the lion's share of what creates the emission of carbon in New York State. And electricity generation is less than about a third of what transportation does. This is carbon emissions over time. So the point worth noting here is that and this is carbon emissions in the country from through 2018. The top line, the dark blue line, is the generation of electricity. And as you can see, since 2008, the emissions of carbon through the generation of electricity has dropped significantly. Meanwhile, the emissions of carbon through uses for transportation has continued to increase. Two reasons for that. One primarily is the conversion of our electric generating stations to burning more natural gas, as we spoke about earlier. And secondly, after the 2008 market crash and financial crisis, much more efficiency came into the market. People started to use less electricity. On the bottom is buildings, relatively flat, industry, relatively flat. transportation emissions continuing to increase, power emissions decreasing. Now, New York is doing pretty good. This is an eye chart, and so I won't linger on it, but there's one point worth making, and that is this is a list of emissions by state from 1990 to 2016. Every state in the union and the district is on there. New York is the third most efficient state in the union in terms of the decrease in the emissions of carbon since in this period covered. So New York is doing pretty good. One of the reasons is that pie chart I said you showed you before, the donut, that we're moving a lot of carbon out of electricity generation. Just for the sake of conversation, the two ahead of New York are the district and Massachusetts. Massachusetts is another area that we do business in. And if you're asking who are the ones on the other end of the scale, Idaho, Nevada, Mississippi, Alabama, Colorado. Let me make a point that I think has become more and more clear. I hope it's clear in this audience. But National Grid believes climate change is real, and we believe that it is impacted by human activity. And so consequently, National Grid is dedicating a lot of time and resources to discussing how to address the issue of carbon. And in each of our states and each of our market areas, we have significant targets, both near-term and longer-term, to reduce the amount of carbon emissions that comes from our activity. This chart represents that as well. There's a challenge and opportunity in this process, and it comes in three particular areas. First, decarbonizing transportation, heat, and electricity. Secondly, to keep it affordable for everyone. And third, to create good, clean energy jobs across all the sectors. We've become, in recent years, to talk about the energy trilemma that we are challenged with as a utility. And that is customers and business needs affordable, reliable energy solutions. But increasingly, in recent years, sustainability is also added to the challenge. Affordable, reliable, and sustainable is what our mission is and what our goal is. However, we have to recognize that high-cost pathways will have multiple repercussions on limiting investment and business competitiveness. Something that I know you know, that upstate New York has uneven pockets of economic opportunity and vitality. At any given time, about 15% of National Grid's residential customers are more than 60 days past due on their bill. So affordability is a significant issue when any utility, including National Grid, looks at balancing the investment in our infrastructure, the investment in new technologies, with what impact that will have on customer bills. What are some of the near-term and long-term approaches that we can take? On the power side, on the electric generation side, ramp up renewable electricity deployment to achieve 60% zero carbon electricity supply by 2030 versus 45% today. On a longer term basis, zero carbon electric system and increasing large scale renewables. On transportation, reach more than 10 million light duty electric vehicles in the Northeast roads, 50% of all light duty vehicles, and then longer term, more than 20 million long-term light duty vehicles. And then on heat, increase the rate of energy efficiency retrofits, continue that oil to gas conversion in the area of building heat that has driven down emissions significantly, and also work in the long term to sustain thermal electricity efficiency and decarbonize natural gas supplies for heating, and to use hybrid heating systems like geothermal. Here are what we believe are the affordable solutions and the affordable pathways to creating a decarbonized future. One is continuing to increase the investment in energy efficiency. As you know, National Grid has significant energy efficiency programs, both for residential, but particularly for commercial customers. Those don't come from the goodness of our heart. There's a business case for those programs, and that is the more efficient we make customers, the more sensitive their investment is, the less that we have to invest, and the lower costs it are. that exists. And we are incentivized by our regulators to, as counterintuitive as it sounds, we are incentivized by our regulators to find ways for customers to use less of our product. And that's what we do through our energy efficiency programs. We talked about the transportation of electrification, expand our policies to promote EVs, and lay out as much as we can make-ready programs. One of our programs that has become significantly utilized is a program to help organizations install electric vehicle charging stations at their locations. I was at Beaver Lake this weekend attempting to be a snowshoer, and electric vehicle charging stations there that we helped fund. I was at Lockheed Martin, one of our largest customers. They've installed electric vehicle charging stations that we've helped fund. The Centro Transportation, the Walsh Transportation Center over near the market and the ballpark, electric vehicle charging stations that we've helped fund. We believe that the electrification of transportation is important. Low carbon heat, increase the deployment of heat pumps and geothermal and deep energy efficiency retrofits, and also find ways to move non-methane natural gas into our system through capturing wastewater, farm waste, and other so-called renewable gas to get that into our network system. Reinforcing the gas system, unfortunately, a meaningful amount of methane is lost through leakage in pipes. The bigger investment that we make in repairing our pipes, moving the cast iron out of the streets, as much as painful as that can be sometimes for traffic and parking in metropolitan areas, replacing that with PVC goes a long way, not only for the safety aspects of taking 40 or 50 year old cast iron pipes out of the ground, but for the environmental and carbon emissions aspects of reducing the leakage of methane. Grid modernization, building and continuing to build electric transmission systems that can move bulk electricity from where it's being generated on the renewable side, which for us is in upstate New York, to the markets where it's needed, particularly in the capital region and especially in downstate New York. And then lastly, continuing to support and invest where it's prudent and allowed to in renewable energy. National Grid made two significant renewable energy acquisitions in the past year. We acquired an organization called Geronimo Energy, which is one of the largest renewable energy developers in North America. And we are also the largest single investor in a company called Sunrun, which is the largest installer of residential rooftop solar in North America as well. So we are making significant investments in that area. How are we going to get there? We have to focus on the whole economy, being economists, being business people, being policy-sensitive individuals like yourself. This is pretty common sense, but we have to recognize the balance of the move to technology and affordability. Targeting the highest emitting fuels and sectors first, optimizing the utilization of existing networks, and avoiding price shocks through strategic growth of electricity and natural gas. Large-scale renewables and transmission connections is what I talked about earlier, and that's a point that I want to reemphasize. Utility-scale renewables, both wind and solar, and building the network to connect those to the markets is what's going to drive significant step changes in the reduction of carbon and the increased use of renewables. And then focusing both on the electric and natural gas network, using both systems to understand that they have a role in continuing the decarbonization process, and supporting specific innovation in what are candidly the hardest areas that still don't have cost-effective alternatives, such as medium and heavy-duty transportation, home heating, industrial heating, zero carbon electricity, and long-term energy storage. Energy storage is going to be a key that unlocks the ability to generate electricity during the day when the sun is shining and the wind is blowing, store it and use it at night. We've developed energy storage facilities, including one in Pulaski, but they're not at utility scale yet. And then also, space heating is going to be a significant challenge because space heating is a significant consumer of a carbon like transportation is. We talked a little bit about the issue of transportation. I want to talk briefly about this concept of carbon pricing. Carbon pricing exists in the electricity business. It's called the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, where a developer or a power plant operator that uses a carbon-based fuel has to pay, gets a discount or pays a fee, a carbon price, to generate into the market. There are proposals in place to apply similar sorts of policy decisions on the transportation side that we support with the proper implementation and institution. Carbon is emitted into the environment right now in many instances for free. There's no consequences to the person who burns the carbon to put that carbon into the environment. Until you price it, until you understand that the externalities and the hardship and the damage that carbon causes needs to be addressed, then it'll continue to happen. Having said that, any price that gets added either to transportation fuel or in other markets to electricity, we believe that those costs should be funneled back into additional research and development to expand the capabilities of renewables, as well as having to offset any increase those prices have to typical customers. We can't do it alone. We're going to need active customer engagement, transformation, transformative industry partners, and a comprehensive policy and regulatory framework. That's why we're engaged. We're engaged with organizations. Kevin Schwab is here. Organizations like Center State CEO, the Manufacturers Association of Central New York, just to mention a few locally. Of course, at the statewide level, with the Business Council, with other organizations that are environmentally focused, and in D.C., as well as in the U.K. Again, we believe that this is the challenge of our era, and we believe it's real, and we believe it needs our attention. The next big step in energy consumption is going to be the use of smart meters in your home. That's where we are going to have to go as an industry and as consumers to empower our customers to create the type of energy environment that they believe will be sustainable and affordable and reliable. We have currently have a proposal before the Public Service Commission to bring a smart meter program to upstate New York. The value of smart meters is several fold. And again, let me hearken back to where I started in terms of educating consumers on how to use electricity in your home. This is going to be our next biggest education challenge for customers. It will involve mobile visiting locations. It will involve social media. It will involve other communications to customers to help customers understand that this is the next transformation in the use of energy. What will a smart meter do for you? Well, at the very basic level, as difficult as this is to admit right now, the only way we know if your power's out is if you call us. We don't have a way to understand that your power is out unless you call us. And once you call us, then we use our algorithms and we use our intelligence to determine, okay, who on your block is out and how many customers are out. But unless you initiate that process or some customer on your block initiates that customer, we don't know. Smart meters will be able to tell us these customers are without power and we'll be able to move for restoration more quickly. So there will be two-way communications. You can talk to us, we can talk to you. Convenience. I don't know how many of you recently have moved in or out of a home or apartment, but that involves rolling a truck to disconnect your service, waiting for the new tenant or the new owner of your home to move there, and rolling another truck out to reconnect it. Smart meters will be able to start and stop service remotely. information on how to manage your costs. Right now, you don't know how much you're spending on your utility bill until we send you that love letter once a month. You will know hourly what you're spending on electricity. It could be relevant for your budget. It could be relevant to show your kids that those 30-minute showers are doing this to my energy bill. It won't be a theory anymore. You can stand them in front of the meter and say, here's how much your shower just cost me. So that'll be relevant as well. It'll also allow you to budget. So candidly, you can set a limit on your meter. And if you say my budget for heat is $150 a month, and it's the 27th of the month, and you're already at $130, then you may opt for an extra sweater instead of running to a temperature that you are used to. It'll also send you signals on when to use electricity, because what will happen is there will be time of use pricing. Electricity, as you saw in the usage graph that I showed you earlier, like anything else in supply and demand, it's more expensive the greater the demand is. So electricity right now is more expensive to produce and buy during the peak hours, but it's far less expensive to produce and buy during off-peak hours. Residential customers pay one price, and so they don't have the benefit of seeing what running a dishwasher at 2 o'clock in the afternoon does versus running it at 10 o'clock at night. And so there'll be a time of use availability. It will also help facilitate the charging of other electricity heavy equipment like an electric vehicle. You'll be able to charge at night and get a better price on your electricity. That's available in limited ways now. It'll be more broadly available through this. It will also create a better opportunity to integrate all the energy using devices in your home, so you will be able to see, here's what my stove is using, here's what my dishwasher is using, here's what my refrigerator is using, here's what that spare refrigerator in the basement that used to be my old refrigerator that now I keep a case of beer and an extra dozen eggs in. Here's what it costs me to run that every month. And so, again, smart metering, greater choice, greater control, and greater convenience. It will put us back in the education business even more than we have been recently, bringing us back to our roots in the 40s and 50s and helping to educate our consumers and create an opportunity for them to become better informed consumers, have greater choice, and have a greater convenience. That proposal is before the Public Service Commission. Right now, we're hoping to have it approved as soon as possible. It's going to be a long process to institute 1.7 million meters or other devices we're going to have to install in upstate New York. And for those of you who, like me, are maybe a little bit cautious about new technology, there's a one-year hold harmless period in this transition from a cost perspective. So during the first year, if you find that having this meter isn't good for you, then you will be held harmless in that first year from a financial perspective, and then you can decide whether you want to stay with it or not. I just want to wrap up with a few other things, and then we'll open it up to questions. I've talked a lot in the big picture about energy, decarbonization, renewables. I don't want to leave without talking about our investment in the communities, especially our investment in places like Central New York. You cannot look around Central New York, certainly downtown, as Kevin will tell you, as Don will tell you, and not see a location that National Grid has invested in through our economic development programs, whether it's the Near West Side, whether it's the Marriott, the Tech Garden, all the development along Warren Street and Salina Street, as well as areas in suburban Syracuse. We have significant economic development projects that support thousands of jobs and invested and helped leverage more than $9 billion in private and public investment throughout New York State. Annually, we spend close to $11 million, again, to spur economic development. We love doing it. It's important that we do it. We don't do it out of the kindness of our hearts. We do it because there's a business case to do it. We do it because there's a reason to help sustainable, well-thought-out growth happen in our markets, because the more customers we have, the more growth that we have, the easier it is to spread out the costs of the investment in the infrastructure is that we have to make. I talked a lot about energy efficiency, and so I'll mention that we have significant energy efficiency programs that Chris can tell you about for our large industrial and commercial customers, heating, lighting, humidification, air handling, pumps and motors, anything that uses electricity or natural gas. We, in a commercial or industrial setting, we probably have a program for you to help you to become more efficient. We also have significant programs that are self-directed for customers at the residential side to use to become more energy efficient, including the development of an energy efficient marketplace that gives you a one-stop shop on where you can go to do things like purchase, again, part of the present, a Nest thermostat for your home at a discounted price. If you don't have a Nest yet, if you don't have a programmable thermostat yet, that's certainly the lowest cost, easiest step that you can take as a residential customer to help reduce your energy costs. And then if you're comfortable enough with technology to move into something like a Nest, I think this one is $70, and it's an easy way to help manage your energy costs. When you're home, when you're away, you become a better informed consumer. You know when your furnace is running, when it isn't, and how you can manage that. As part of our outreach to all of you here and regarding energy efficiency, I just want to let you know that we have a parting gift for you. A couple of LED light bulbs and insulators and plugs that Gwen and Chris will help you pick up on the way out. Just a small token of appreciation, one, for your investment in public policy issues and the greater good of the Central New York community, and two, to maybe get you hooked on, these are a lot better than they used to be. That's the first thing people say is I didn't like the curly ones, and I didn't like the light, and I didn't like the color. Candidly, they are a lot better. And if my nickel's worth of advice, and they last a lot longer. So my nickel's worth of advice is, the next time the hardest light bulb in your house goes out, put in an LED one. The one that's at the top of the closet or in the middle of the stairwell that you have a hard time getting to, the first one you want to put in is this one, because it'll last a lot longer and you probably use that light a lot. And so they'll be waiting for you on the way out. That's all I have, and so I'm very grateful for to the university, to Emily, to all of you for being here. We have some time for questions, and then I will save our last question or the mystery question for later if nobody asked it. So, please.
There's a lot of building going on in Syracuse, of which I carefully observe the construction methods, and it seems to me that one of the areas that's being ignored are the building codes. And doing efficient building of whether it be renovation or new construction. Do you feel that, I like to call you NIMO, even though you have a different name, has any role in the building code for energy efficiency?
Let me address the second part of your question first. I want you to take this the right way. If you make out the check to NIMO, we'll still cash it. Okay. So we're not offended by that. We're National Grid. We operate under National Grid, but we still cash those checks made out to Niagara Mohawk. We don't have a big role in at the local level in terms of enforcing building codes or energy efficiency codes. Certainly at the policy level, both in Albany, New York, for statewide, New York City, where we do a lot of work in D.C., we advocate strongly for energy efficiency, and as a matter of fact, many of our programs, both on the energy efficiency side and the economic development side, are focused on retrofits or rebuilds to locations who are looking to be more energy efficient. I'm not an architect or a codes person, so I can't speak directly to what you're seeing, but I know that our role is to make the programs available when people come to us at the local level, and then at the policy level, make sure our voices are heard, that we believe energy efficiency, that's the time to do it. It's either when you're building it from the ground up or you're gutting it. Once your shell and your superstructure established, that fitting it in then is more difficult.
I have a question regarding hydroelectricity. One of the ways that we promote our area is talking about how much great water we have. So I was kind of surprised to find that you weren't using more hydro to develop your electricity. I wondered if you could talk about that.
Sure. We use all the hydro we can get our hands on. And much of our hydroelectricity comes from two sources. One, the large New York Power Authority projects, the St. Lawrence project up north, the Niagara project, and then many smaller hydroelectric power plants. National Grid is no longer an owner of electricity generation. So I could have made that more clear before. For the most part, except for some very, very small exceptions downstate, we move the energy from the producer to the user. We don't produce the energy. And so our role in saying, well, we should use more hydro or less hydro, we use all the hydro we can get our hands on, and all the hydro that's out there gets put into the market because it's has a zero fuel cost, so its bid clearing price is very low. And I'll emphasize as well is, candidly, where it only may be listed as about a quarter of our New York State supply, that's significantly above the national average. New York State is actually blessed because of the St. Lawrence and because of the Niagara and other projects in state to have more hydroelectricity generation than most states.
Two questions. First, what is National Grid doing relative to electrifying your fleet? And secondly, climate scientists are increasing the urgency of action. How is that impacting your strategic plans?
So a couple things. The electrification of fleet, we continue to look at our fleet in terms of electrifying it, and we are adding some vehicles to that. It's a process that takes a little time to turn over fleet, but we are looking at, I can tell you what's even more interesting and fascinating, and I hope to be able to take advantage of it soon, is the company has started a program to help subsidize through our own shareholder funds the employee purchase of electric vehicles. So if you are an employee of National Grid, we have a roster of approved vehicles. They're all the typical ones that you can understand, but you can receive a $5,000 stipend as a benefit to purchase an electric vehicle. So the company, both from our own funds, are trying to support our employees move, and we've had over 250 employees purchase electric vehicles as part of that program, and then looking at our fleet. Our strategic plan is as closely aligned to the reality of climate change as we can make it. We are, as I said earlier, we believe in it. We believe we have to help other parts of the industry come along to understand it better. We believe we have to help our customers come along to understand it better. We are challenged by the pace and the affordability. And so that's the balance that we're making.
Good morning. I have a couple of questions. I'll try to keep them short and concise. As you know, about 3 or 4 years ago, the state passed legislation to allow communities, governments to buy their poles and electricity. I know Syracuse has done that. I want to know what your experience is across the state. Are other communities moving towards that? And then the second question is, obviously, they still have to get their electricity, so they're just purchasing the infrastructure. They have to obviously take care of it. So what's been your experience with governments then going back and bidding out the maintenance?
Sure. So there's two parts to your question. One is what's called community aggregation. the ability for communities to purchase their electricity as a group. And then the second part is the acquisition of our street lighting assets. So let me answer that second part first. It's truly just begun, so we don't have a significant amount of experience in it yet. The city of Syracuse has purchased their streetlights. The city of Albany has purchased their streetlights. The city of Utica is in the queue. So those other cities will probably be following. Some smaller communities, Kaz, Skinny Atlas, around here, Cortland, have or plan to. We will continue to supply the electricity to those poles, like we always do. And so essentially they become a customer where our obligation stops at the meter box. What experiences municipalities will have operating and maintaining those is yet to be seen. Regarding community aggregation, the ability for communities to get together and try to basically bulk purchase their electricity, we support that for one very simple reason. As I mentioned earlier, we don't generate electricity. We don't profit from its production. We make our revenue and our return based on the transmission and delivery of it. So you're going to preempt the secret question that I'll answer later. But we're indifferent to where a customer, whether it's a Bristol Myers or Kevin Schwab's house or the city of Syracuse, who they buy their electricity and natural gas from. And so we support those sorts of community aggregations.
I'm getting inundated with Clean Choice.
Here it is.
Arcadia.
This is it.
And actually came here kind of wondering whether National Grid was going to stay in business. But you've answered that too, because you're going to buy how do I know which is best for me to choose to have at my home?
That is the question. That's the third question that I get asked. And let me answer it this way, and I'll just give you a few facts and figures. But first, let's understand the relevance. You have the ability to buy your commodity, your electricity or natural gas, from another provider other than National Grid. Historically, National Grid was a generator. We sold you the electricity and we moved it to your house. We are no longer generators, so now we just move it to your house. We buy it on your behalf, and then we move it to your house. We don't profit from buying it on your behalf. We don't mark it up. We don't make any money on that actual kilowatt that gets delivered. We make our money on the fact that we delivered it to you. So we are truly indifferent financially to where you purchase your electricity or natural gas from, whether you're a commercial or industrial entity or a residential customer. A couple figures. For our commercial and industrial customers, our largest customers, and these are round numbers, but about 85% of them get their electricity and natural gas from a third-party provider, largely because those third-party providers can customize the package for, if you're Bristol, if you're Lockheed, if you're Novellus, there are suppliers that will customize the package the way you want it. 85 go to what's called ESCO, energy supply companies, 15% stay with us. On the flip side, for residential customers, it's almost the exact opposite. About 85% of our customers continue to get their commodity, their electricity and natural gas supply, from National Grid. We purchase it on their behalf. We deliver it to them. And about 15% get it from a third party. My best answer and my most magnanimous answer is you have to be an informed consumer. You have to look at, and there are, our website provides you the opportunity to look at our price and to look at the prices that other can provide for you. There are some options that ESCOs can provide that we cannot. One is a fixed price. They can fix your price for your natural gas and electricity for the month. Now, please remember that a fixed price doesn't mean it's the lowest price. It just means it's the fixed price. So there will be several months where you could possibly have purchased it from National Grid or someone else at a far lower price, but you committed to a fixed price. The other product that they can offer you is something close to 100% renewable product. If you are so committed or so involved environmentally that you want to make that commitment to pay more, which you will, sort of essentially commit 100% of your load to a renewable generator, then they can do that for you. I can talk to you more about the nuts and bolts of it a little bit later, but that's the background of it.
So we frequently get those little letters in our mailboxes that say that we're, you know, the most efficient on the street, or our house is below
Right.
our neighbors have.
Yes.
For those of us who live in apartments, we don't always have control over what our landlords do to make homes efficient.
Right.
What kind of incentives? You know, if we buy a Nest, it doesn't really matter, because we don't have control over the windows in the house or other maintenance. So what can, I mean, there's a lot of renters in Syracuse living in 80 to 100-year-old houses. So what kind of incentives can there be? What kind of things can we do to communicate with our landlords to make our apartments more efficient?
Sure, you were referencing our home energy reports. Some people love them, some people, let's say, unlove them. And I will tell you a story about somebody's mother-in-law who asked to be taken off the list because she didn't like what she was getting. But the reality is those are very valuable tools, because we seek community as humans. We want to be like everybody else. It's a behavioral technique that other utilities use, and they're very effective. To show you, now everybody's house isn't comparable. When the kids are home, you use a lot more energy than when they go back to college. You may have a bigger house than the guy next door. All of those are relative, but in aggregate, they're comparable. The landlord issue is a relevant one. I do think that a programmable thermostat can help you manage the times you're away, and help you do setbacks when you go to bed or when you go to work in the morning. So I still think may not make sense to go all the way to a Nest, but a programmable thermostat makes sense. If you have your own meter, then that's the way to go. But again, I think I appreciate the point that working on the landlord community is a difficult one.
So I have property up north, and periodically I experience outages. And what's great is that National Grid sends me an email saying your electric is out, and then they send me one saying it's been restored, which is really helpful when I'm in Syracuse so I can call somebody to go check things. But my question is, since I've lived in Syracuse, I've never experienced an outage. Why do I have so many up north?
Yeah. There's the anticipated my next question. Thank you for the plug for our text message system. It's been very valuable for people who are able to sign into it. Where do you live in Syracuse?
In Syracuse? DeWitt, actually.
Yeah, in DeWitt. So the most direct answer and easiest answer is trees. There are far fewer trees in an urban setting or a suburban setting. They're easier to trim. They're easier to get access to. Where's your spot up north?
Alexandria Bay.
Right. So it's more significantly treed, and the distance, the run of the lines is much longer between substation and homes, and so there's more exposure to trees. If you were to ask an operations director at National Grid, at any utility, if I gave you $5 extra a day to spend on something to improve reliability, what would you do? He would say trim a tree. She would say trim a tree.
Hi, Alberto. First of all, thanks for doing this. I think this is really enlightening for everyone who gets a chance to hear and see a presentation like this. And it really is impressive to see that bend on the curve on one of the early charts that you showed about where our carbon emissions are coming from, and the fact that we've had the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, and the mix of power that we have has really shown that we can bend the curve on our carbon emissions, and we've already done quite a bit when it comes to energy production. But on transportation, you did touch on it a little bit. Some of the things that we know are real issues, for example, in keeping people from moving to electric vehicles, you know, range anxiety probably being number one, but cost of the infrastructure to whether it be public infrastructure for recharging or home infrastructure for recharging. I think you touched on some of the commercial areas where you have assistance. Has National Grid taken any steps towards somehow incentivizing people to put chargers in at home? And also, are there cost incentives for the energy itself, for example, to charge at night?
Sure. Thank you, Kevin. There is currently a time of use rate available for energy for electric vehicle users. Time of use meaning the prices vary throughout the day. And so it is available. It's not heavily utilized, but the smart meter technology will solve that for everyone. So you'll have the opportunity to get different pricing through the day. We talked about codes earlier. There are some communities now, particularly in California, that are mandating new home construction have garages wired for electric vehicle charging. And so you can see that trend is starting. Regarding the investment, we are making significant investment at, again, we talked about the largest bang for the buck. Right now, our largest bang for the buck in supporting electric vehicle charging from an infrastructure standpoint is helping to support large population locations where people are at for a long time. So what we have to do incentivize Lockheed Martin to put in four or five charging stations versus what it costs to incentivize individuals. Right now, the biggest bang is for those large locations, but we'll look at the other. Regarding range anxiety, battery technology will help with that. You know, right now, we're the best of them are between 250 and 300 miles. That's going to start to crack the barrier. You know, the real test is going to be, you know, you ask the people, what do I want? I said, I want what I want, what I get when I go to a gas station. I want it the whole transaction to take about 4 minutes. By the time I pull up, fuel, pay, and buy my Twizzlers and go, right? And that's how long I want it to take. But let me just say something about, and then also regarding electric vehicles, we're starting to learn where the market is. And our first pieces of knowledge are telling us that the market is in a segment right now from a cost perspective and a technology forward perspective that is in that near luxury marketplace for vehicles. And let me give you a fascinating fact. The Tesla 3, which is Tesla's quote unquote entry level model, you can get it for about $40,000. Okay? In the United States in 2019, the Tesla 3 outsold the Audi 4 class, the Mercedes C class, the Lexus LS, and the BMW 3 Series combined. More Tesla 3s were sold than all of those cars combined. They're calling it the BMW killer. The CEO of BMW resigned last year because he said, I didn't see it coming. Okay, so we know right now that's where the market is. Now, everybody's not a Mercedes, BMW, Audi, Lexus customer. We've got a lot of Chevy, Toyota, and Kia customers. How do we get those customers to move there is going to be the next challenge.
Please join me in thanking Alberto Bianchetti.